In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome. This is the Paul Ryder Tapes. I'm Angela Smith, ex-wife of Paul, founding member and bassist with Happy Mondays, as well as being a singer in his side project Big Arm and a musician in several other groups. So this week we have a really, really special bonus edition featuring the absolute legend. That is Bez.
So can you start off, we'll do it kind of chronologically, start off by how you very first knew about Paul.
I told that story in the church when I stood up and done my thing, and my very first meeting of Paul and Sean is when they was in the car, what we used to call the egg, the old yellow Escort, Mark II Escort. I was up at the stocks, I can't remember what I was doing up there. At the time, I'd been up to a lot of mischief anyway. And next thing, Paul and Sean pulled in the egg, and I seen two little heads about that big peeping up over the dashboard, and that was like my first meeting of him. And at that time, I'd heard a lot about, obviously, because Gaz, Mark and Paul, we all went to the same school, so I obviously knew about the band, and they'd just got back from Amsterdam at the time, and they had the single Delightful on it. And to me, it was so amazing that people that, I didn't actually know Paul and Sean, but people I went to school with, I'd had this record out. It was like amazing. And I was just so blown away. And I actually thought they were superstars by that time. And they looked so cool. The pair of them, like, they're proper cool as fuck. Then I actually went a few nights later, or days later, that I went down to meet Sean. No, I'd actually met him properly nights later.
And did you think, oh, I'd like to be a part of that?
Well, you know what? At the time, the last thing on my mind was being part of the Happy Mondays, because I couldn't play anything, I couldn't do anything. I'm not like a musician. And I was just so happy that people I knew had got a record out, because it was like a dream beyond your grasp. It's something that it doesn't happen to everybody. So it was like, yeah, it was absolutely amazing. And I remember when I first went to watch the band play, it was at Corbiers, downstairs in Corbiers. And there's about 10 of us in there watching it. And it's not long after this first meeting in the Stocks car park. And that was the first time I ever seen the band play. And I was like blown away by it. And it's only a little gig in Corbiers. And eventually I ended up joining the band at the Hacienda on the night, no, the Tube. It was, and New Order was playing for the Tube, and the Mondays were supporting. And that's the actual night that I actually joined the band.
Oh, was it? Can you tell me about that moment? Like, what prompted you to get up on stage?
I've been telling this story a lot recently. So at the time, I just bought loads of black micro dots and white micro dots. And these Nikon dots supposedly, allegedly, came from a thing called Operation Julie, which I don't know if you remember or not, but it was these kids who wanted to spike all the reservoirs in England and turn on the whole of England onto acid. And these acid were supposed to be leftovers from this operation. So anyway, we all done this acid all previous nights as well, because I lived in Eccles at the time, and we all was having the first acid house parties as well. And I'm jumping a little bit going back. This is before the said night. And I used to have a cassette player, and you could play two tapes at the same time, and you could get a drum machine going, put these two tapes in, and you used to get horse to plug his bass, you could plug your bass in, and he used to plug his bass in and play bass over the top of it. So we used to have things like Penguin Cafe, Frank Zappa, some drum machine going, and horse's bass playing over a lot of it, and every now and again it made this magic moment like you've never heard before. You're like, oh yeah, that's it. And then we used to have some wild parties down there on these microdots. So I eventually ended up joining the band because of these microdots. And this one night Sean was that off his head on it, and he turned around and goes, "Bez, you're going to have to come on stage with me, because I'm right off my finger." He needed moral support. And I said, "Fuck off, I'm not getting on stage, you're fucking mad." And after a bit of suing and throwing, I had to jump on stage, obviously. And on the way up there, I seen a pair of maracas, which I grabbed. And I got on there, and I was like, off my head on this acid. I was giving it rock all. And I had when I came off, I had a whole size of a 50 pence piece in my hand. And I went home laughing that night, but the funny thing is, next day, somebody said to Sean and Paul, when he was out of the egg, this girl come up and said to him, "Well, that was really nice of you last night, letting that kid with special needs on stage with you."
I've not heard that before. That's brilliant, brilliant. So what was that it then? That was your fate was sealed and they said, right, you're doing this every time?
Yeah, well, I'm not too sure how keen everyone else was to have me, because like, this is like a one-off, and it was actually Tony Wilson who said that I should join the band, because I think I reminded him a little bit of Ian Curtis, you know, because he's fucking do all that mad sort of freaky sort of dancing. And it was like Tony who kind of pushed to the band more than the band did, actually.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. But I've been on stage ever since, obviously.
Well, he was a visionary, Tony, wasn't he? He knew what he was doing.
But I can tell you another story about the egg as well, what I told in the church as well. And it was in the early days, none of us had a carry. And Paul used to run the car. I don't know how he'd done it, but it was never even... to the edge of empty. It was always half down the empty. And that car, it seemed to run like magic on thin air. It used to go everywhere. Anyway, it was that skin. We were starving. And we all could be to practice one day. And we decided, I said, "No, go to Morrison's on the way home." And I used to go with Morrison's and fill a shopping trolley up with food and just walk out with it. And on the way to the car, I don't know why they never stopped me at the side. It might be because I looked a bit mad. So I threw all this food in the boot, but the security fella got Paul's number, horse's number. And next minute, there's a phone call saying that we've got to go to the police station and all that. And that's when I knew that this bond forever, because obviously he never grasped me up and he came up with some outlandish why I was in the car with him.
Wow, brilliant. So what did you think would happen with the band? Did you have any idea that it would reach the heights that it did? Where did you think it would go at that point?
Well, you know what? We used to sit there at night, because me, Paul and Sean used to all live in the same flat in Boobs Town. And we used to like listen to it. And we used to have our dreams. And we always thought that was the next best thing since sliced bread. And we was always never under the illusion, even though it was really crap, we always thought we was the best thing ever, and we had the massive dreams, and we always used to talk about having like a Porsche each with Freaky 1, Freaky 2, Freaky 3 number plates and all that, and we used to fantasise about our futures. But unfortunately, we never got as big as we dreamt.
So what other heights would you want to reach?
Well, we wanted to be like the biggest rock and roll band in the world. Legendary status, rock and roll. We lived a rock and roll lifestyle, but we never quite managed to get that world recognition of being one of the maddest rock and roll bands in the business.
Oh, I think you did. I think you underestimate yourselves. Seriously, I mean, who doesn't know about the Happy Mondays?
Honestly, we had these dreams that never quite occurred, unfortunately. And that's because we was mismanaged along the way as well, which never helps, you know what I mean? The best manager we had was Phil Sachs, because he did it because he loved it, and he loved us, he loved the band. He was a great person. I remember when we first got Nathan, and we went out with Nathan, and we was all sat in this little bus of ours. And he's supposed to be the manager, and he cops off with this bird on his first ever gig. And this is our first ever gig. He's gone out on the road, never been out with on the road with us. Supposed to be our brand new. And the bird only nicks all the fucking first night's wages off him. You're like, oh, you couldn't get off to a better start than that.
You talked about it earlier, but that was one of the things I wanted to ask you. What was it like sharing a flat with Paul and Sean in Boothstown?
Well, yeah, it was great in them days. It was fantastic because we were young. We had fucking dreams. We was having great times, great parties, all really enjoying ourselves. And of course, in the early days, before we could afford to have our own hotel room, me and Horse used to share rooms together as well. So we travelled the world, sharing rooms together as well. I could tell you a few stories, but I better not.
When you were flat sharing, who did the cooking and who did the cleaning? Like, how did that work?
The flat was, when we left there, it was basically condemned. You should have seen the state of the place. Like, there's fungi growing where fungi has never been seen growing before. One day we decided to do the pots, and we had to fill the bath up to clean the pots in.
Paul talked about that.
And the side mark, you know, because the three of us are getting a bath. And the fucking towels used to stink. There used to be a thick, rusty tie mark round the bath because no one ever used to clean the bath. It wasn't very, like, you weren't going to impress any young bird anyway coming in the house, that's for sure. I think they, like, was, like, flabbergasted about just the way we lived. But I think they could forgive us because we were such good fun.
Exactly. Talk a little bit about the difference between Sean and Paul in, like, personality. I know they're brothers, then they have a lot of similarities, but they also have a lot of differences.
It wasn't so bad at first, but when there's just a lot of ego going on, and ego and money mixed together, and it was, like, both really competitive, aren't they, Sean and Paul? And I think that's where it started going a bit west, because there was always a little power battle going on between them. And the biggest mistake I ever made was when I've tried breaking up the fighting one day, full on fight. I thought, oh, fucking hell, I'm going to have to break him up. And I went in and Paul bit me thumb that hard, he nearly bit it off. And I thought, ah, I said, oh, she fucking biting me fucking thumb. And I never bothered getting no stepping in between them again. But yeah, they used to have fights all the time. It was a love-hate relationship what they used to have going on with each other.
I mean, I think that continued really throughout their lives, didn't it?
And it's because they were both so competitive with each other. There was always a chance to out-cool each other. It was the coolest.
Do you think the tension between them added to the dynamic of the band? Like, do you think without that tension there wouldn't have been the magic that there was?
It gave it an edge, and it was so normal. It wasn't even like with the split of the Mondays, and that's when it became a proper thing then. But until that moment with the Mondays splitting up, it wasn't any big deal. And it became a big deal when the Mondays split up with all the bad blood what was caused by that. Me and Sean, as I always thought, it was a terrible mistake by the rest of the band. They should have stuck on, because we fought tooth and nail to keep that band together at the time.
I thought it was just Mark and Gaz and PD that split off, though. Paul was still, like, in the early days of Black Grape, he was still involved, wasn't he?
He got involved in the early days, but all the bad blood stemmed from that moment. And the pair of them had terrible addictions at the time, which, you know, clouds everyone's judgment. You know, we're no place to make any judgment calls. Not anyone made any sense anyway. And they're both, like, in a terrible way, to be truthful, in addiction, which never helps either.
And how did that affect you? Like, did you worry about them?
Well, I used to worry about everybody. I used to worry about the whole band. I was, you know, felt it was my responsibility to look after everyone in the band at the time. It might not appear so, but that's what I felt my role was. I cared and loved for the whole band, and I did whatever I could to make things right.
Yeah. So was it frustrating for you when you couldn't fix them?
Well, yeah, because the frustrating thing for me was how nobody could see what they'd got. They couldn't see beyond the fucking that moment. And it was madness, like, fucking hell, we're in a fucking massive band, fucking world, known right round the world. What is it? Fucking hell, you should be fucking really happy. And that's what used to do me head in, because fucking, I was loving it, mate. I fucking, like, buzzing me fucking socks off. And I couldn't understand why everybody else wouldn't be the same, felt the same about it all. And it's today I still buzz on it all. I, like, love it. Like, really proper love and buzzing on it. And think how fucking lucky we are to be in this sort of position. And I couldn't understand why they could never see that.
Why do you think it was that they couldn't? Because of the addiction?
Yeah, because of addictions, yeah, and unfortunately the drug of choice at that time makes you extremely selfish, and the only thing what you can think about is yourself, unfortunately.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the recordings. You were always very prominent, you were always there when all the albums were being recorded. Did you go, you went to, when Bummed was recorded, you were there in Driffield. Was it Driffield?
My favourite story about the band is actually the first album. And we recorded it with John Cale, 24 Hour Party, People Ask the Face Can't Smile, White Out. And I was sat in the studios with John Cale, and all the band were going through the tracks, what they were going to play. And John Cale was kept turning around looking at me going, what, like, fucking... And I think, oh, he's going on about the mad bass change, though, like... In Sarsa, I was like, and I thought, oh, he's tripping him out. And no, it was, he couldn't believe that as a band, didn't even understand basic music, 1, 2, 3, 4 time. And he couldn't believe, he's going, what the fuck? He couldn't believe he didn't know what 1, 2, 3, 4 was. And then he starts, like, the band, you start off, like, slow, get really, and, like, different speeds right through the whole song. And he, like... He actually taught us 1, 2, 3, 4, John Cale, that's what we came out with. And that whole album, it sounded fucking amazing. Today, you'd never get that situation where you'd have a band. Because the old band was self-taught, that's what was a great thing about the Happy Mondays. Like, nobody had been taught at school, nobody had been anywhere. The old band had taught themselves how to play an instrument. And that's why we didn't know the basics, because nobody had actually told us. And that's what made the Mondays special, I think, because the whole thing self-taught, we all learnt together and got fucking better together.
Do you think if they had had lessons that the music would have been completely different and not as magic?
Well, yeah, it's good that it develops the way it did, and that's what gave it its unique sound. But the great thing about the whole band, we learnt together and developed together. And and at the time, there's nobody else making the music what we were making. Nobody could put the finger on it. It had, though, in the early days, that childish element to the sound. Fucking, like, no kids who don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Therein was the charm, and that's why everybody was attracted to it, I think. It wasn't like your Identikit record company-fuelled product, was it?
I don't think you'd ever get a situation where a band gets signed, don't know basic music, and get signed to a record label. That's thanks to, you know, Tony Wilson and Factory Records.
Do you have any memories of recording Bummed with Martin Hannett?
I do, yeah. It's kind of faded memories, but I do have memories, and it That was another great album. Again, working with Martin, was up in Driffield. It was the height of the Ecstasy explosion. So the whole band was on really good vibes. Everyone was just eating ease. Fucking the addictions hadn't even entered into the equation then. And that was probably where the most enjoyable it was to be in the Mondays. Massive following, all the lads loved us. We had this like little bit of magic going on. And yeah, it's a great album, Bummed, as well. I really like the Bummed album. I really love it when we play Bummed tracks on tour.
Because there aren't many that you do play generally, are there, from Bummed, I don't think?
Well, we did play the thing, I can't remember, to be truthful. My recollection is also quite faded. No, it's not the best at times. It's the same, you can remember it, you weren't there. I think it's quite true.
Brilliant. So you went to LA. What was that like when you were doing Pills and Thrills?
Yeah, well, it was amazing. Well, before we went out there, we was on an 8-week tour of America. And that whole experience, being in America, touring, and it was leading up to going to LA to record the album. And we just had the most amazing time. Was working with Osborne Oakenfold. He created this whole new sound. He understood what the Mondays, our vision of what we thought we was. They made us that band with that album. Everything what we had imagined. Hey, we had big convertible cars, driving around thinking we're Lord of the Man. And we had such an amazing time. And the great thing about it as well at that time, that the band was getting on great as well. There was no heroin involved, I don't think, at that time, recording that album. And it was really like a magical moment for the band. 8 weeks in LA, imagine 8 weeks in LA, that could have been really dangerous. And I remember when we finished the album, we was playing, we had a pill party at Oakwood Apartments, which is quite a famous place in LA. One of the B actors are staying there. So it was infamous place, really. There's a lot of starlets or semi-stars. It was all going on there. We had a great, unbelievably good time out there making that album.
Can you talk a little bit about Derek and the importance of him in the mix, especially in the early days?
Yeah, well, both Derek and Linda, so don't forget Linda as well, because she used to make the corned beef and tomato butties for us all when we all went out on the road. And without Horseman, there would have been no Happy Mondays. He was the true driving force behind it all, and his love of his sons. He'd do anything for his sons. There was nothing he wouldn't do. He sucked the band on, drove us all around, and a lot of the time in the early days, it costed him. It was coming out of his own wallet. We didn't even make enough in the gig to pay for the van and the fuel. Remember buying us all bacon butties at the server. He was such a great man. He did such a lot. Like, say, there would be no Happy Mondays if it weren't for Horseman.
Yeah, yeah. How do you think it was for Sean and Paul having their dad around in those early days?
Well, you know what? I think they really appreciated it. I think they absolutely loved having him there. And to have such a dad was so supportive of your lads. If you don't appreciate that, then what can you appreciate? He was, like, so important to... to the album. And he used to do everything. He rode, he did the sound, drove. He's like, he did absolutely every job involved with the Mondays. Saw man in, drive the van, did the sound, did the roadie in, he did everything.
I remember in Iceland when I very first met everyone, seeing him standing in for Sean in soundcheck singing. And he sounded like Sean.
Yeah, well, he did sprawn from his groin, didn't he? So.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Do you remember that trip to Iceland?
I did. That was when you first met Paul. But that, yeah, that was quite a mad trip. And the funny thing was, the warehouse party, in the warehouse full of stock, and obviously I had loads of mants in there, like, oh, fucking hell, I'll have these, oh, yeah. It was like a miniature crime spree went on at the time as well. But, yeah, it's a great trip, swimming at the Blue Lagoon. It was one of those memorable gigs, a weekend in Reykjavik. Yeah, it's one of them trips that you don't forget.
And then Barbados. Tell me about Barbados.
Well, Barbados was quite the same thing. So we went out there because there was supposed to be no drugs there, and obviously there was a cracker fucking pandemic going on. And then I can tell you a really funny story, though. One night, me and Paul had been smoking fucking thing, and we decided we was going to go to the Six Rolls to get some more. And on the way, we seen Sean's car on the road, upside down in the middle of the road. I said to Paul, like, pull the car over now. So we pulled over. I said, we'll get the battery, you know, because we could swap it for crap. So we both got out the finger, popped the door, and he took the battery with him, had it. And I remember us as well on the last day when we was leaving. I'd got a load of gear laid on just before the morning that we was leaving, which is a bit naughty of him, but when these must. But yeah, it's great, because the great thing about that album was we got to work with Chris France and Seema Weymouth, and I actually thought it was a really good album. It was one of the best albums because it didn't have that modern production what everyone wanted. But when you listen back, it's a great fucking album. And to get to work with Talking Heads, with some of your heroes as well. And you know what? The funny thing is, I've actually been back to Barbados on holiday. And I can't believe what a great place it is. When you're being quite normal when you're there instead of being insane.
Okay, so how did you feel when the whole thing fell apart in, was it 1995 or 96, when there was the infamous record company meeting and Sean went away and didn't come back?
Well, it was inevitable. We knew it was coming. It was a really sad time where when you split up with your band, there's nothing quite like I say, it's even worse than splitting up with your missus. It's that heartbreaking, heart-wrenching. It's like no feeling. I can't describe it. No, the nearest could describe it's like splitting up with your missus after 10 years and you find her cheating. It's that sort of feeling. And that's how awful it actually feels when you come to that moment. But somehow, through thick and thin, we've been wrote off as a group of people that many times, and we keep coming back.
So in 1999 was the first reunion after that, wasn't it, when Simon Moran got the band back together?
Well, I can't really remember, to be truthful on that. And at the time, I think I might have been treating it as like a smash and grab. I really didn't give a fuck because I didn't see anything here. I thought, I wasn't going to join at first, go back. My heart wasn't really into the thing. We still hadn't really made friends either from the breakup either. And it felt like a bit like a smash and grab. It's a funny thing, but I'm glad we did it anyway. And it got the band back on tour. But I can't remember how many times we've split up as a band now. I've lost count and reformed. So I've been in every reform you can think of.
The big one was 2012, like the last time when it was all the original lineup. And I don't know about you, but I know that Paul found out about it when somebody emailed me a copy of something that had been written in The Sun saying the whole band was getting back together with the original lineup. No one had asked Paul.
Like I say, it's never gone as it should be. And it's always been chaotic, to say the least, being a member of the Happy Mondays. That's the only thing I can say. And to be truthful, I can hardly remember a lot of this shit. I can't remember the ins and outs of everything.
Do you have, like, a best memory of being on stage or of a particular gig?
Well, for me, my favourite all-time greatest gig was Rock the Rio. For me, that was Mondays at the Maddest. We had such a great time playing in front of it. And we was in the hotel with Guns N' Roses, and all it's actually caused fucking chaos. Like, you won't believe how fucking mad we was. Like, there's no words could describe it. I was actually putting a hotel with Guns N' Roses away from all the other acts because we were deemed as the two mad rock and roll bands. And Guns N' Roses were quite, no, they're rock and roll, but in like a proper rock and roll American way. They look like your fucking typical rock stars, where we look like just a bunch of fucking knobheads from some way.
Did you interact with Guns N' Roses?
We said hello to him. I've actually said hello quite a few times to him in over the years. But we didn't really hang out in any sort of way. I don't think we was cool enough for him.
And you went to meet Ronnie Biggs. Tell me about that.
We did, yeah. We met Ronnie Biggs. Great shame. Well, it was nice to meet somebody who plays such an historical moment in British history. And then we met Piers Morgan, yeah. Who actually said I spiked his burger, but I never did. But I did smoke stiff an ounce of coke on the plane next to him on the way home, and he pretended to be asleep all the way. And I was under a blanket like that, me and Paul Davies. I suppose that's a story you shouldn't be telling, really.
Oh, brilliant. Do you remember when Paul left the band? In 2000, when you'd got back together again, he'd just got an Oasis support tour and he'd just given up heroin and just had a baby, and he decided that if he carried on in the band with Sean, Sean was getting on his nerves so much that he'd relapse, and so he left.
A lot of this shit, what went on, honestly, I have absolutely no recollection of. I've wrote books and I fucking can't remember what's fucking gone on. It's really bad. And it's because we're all fucking pretty out there, every last one of us. But fucking a lot of the Mondays I've actually got no memory of, which is not fucking good, really. It's not a good state of affairs. And I think Sean's the same as well. I just cannot recall fucking so much shit. I've been told things what have gone on. I've had no idea. I fucking stuck in an ignorant bliss, even. that is the mad thing about being in the Mondays, how fucking little I actually remember of it.
Well, at least you know you had fun doing it. That's the thing.
Well, we had fun. We had lots of fun. And the saddest thing for me was when I got the phone call the morning Paul died, and there was Mealy's going, "Bez, you got to call me dad." And I rushed right down to the house, and he was still laying in the front room. Mark had tried doing some mouth-to-mouth on him, and it was so shocking to see one of your best mates who you spent lay there dead and there. And it comes so unexpectedly, doesn't it, death? I'll never forget his face, because he looked really angry to me, because he looked like it wasn't his time to go, and he just lay on the floor there, and he fucking, like, so mad. And then my dad died about 5 hours later as well, which was a double death in one day.
Wow, that must have been really, really hard for you.
But the great thing is how all the band, everybody was there. And he had the greatest funeral service I've ever been to. It was so amazing. It was like a fantastic send-off for him, weren't it? If he was there, he would have been so proud of his service.
I know. So how do you feel he'll be remembered? Like, what's the kind of legacy that he's leaving behind?
Well, he's going to be remembered for his bass lines, isn't he, for the Mondays. He wrote some incredible, powerful bass lines. Well, the backbone of the Mondays, what we was, the bass lines were, like, really big, powerful bass lines.
And as a friend, how will you... What are the memories that you'll carry with you?
But being an happy Monday and the experience that we've gone through together, and that is so special, to be a part of the band The Happy Mondays and a group of lads from Salford. We had fuck all but a dream, and we pursued that dream together and had amazing highs and lows along the way. There's nobody can take that away from us. I always say I'm an happy Monday till the day I die. That's who I am, an happy Monday.
What do you believe? Do you believe he's around?
Well, what I believe is we live in a circle of life, and life is never ending. This bit of life, what we're living now, is just a very small part of life, and life goes on. And we live forever, that's what I believe. I don't believe that we die. I believe that our existence is forever, and it goes on forever, and we're going to the circle of life. Not quite sure what the circle of life is, but I think we live forever.
Do you think that you'll see him again sometime?
Well, you know what, I just don't know. It'd be nice to think that you did run into your family and friends when you die. I just can't say, but I do know life is forever. That I really feel that in me blood. And I believe also that souls over time continuously cross paths through centuries. Have you ever read a book called Cloud Atlas? It deals with that sort of issue. Over centuries and that, these same people's paths are always crossing. I feel that is the case, and I feel that through what the lives we live, our paths will always cross because we've been brought together. That's what I feel.
Cloud Atlas, I'll look that up. That sounds interesting.
It's an amazing book.
Is there anything else that you... any stories that you want to tell about Paul? Or
I could do, but I wouldn't want to tell some of them, so I'll just keep them to myself and to my own memories. I'd just like to say that we've fucking... no, really loved him like a brother. We're part of a band, we shared so many moments together. Like I say, we used to share rooms right across the whole of the world. It's always me and us sharing together. And we shared so many moments.
Thank you so much for talking to me. Really, really.
All right, Angela. Well, I hope you got what you got. You know exactly.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you. He's brilliant, isn't he? He's such a lovely soul. Have you given us a review yet? If not, please do, as it really does help us. And if you'd like us to keep making these bonus episodes, please become a patron of the show by going to patreon.com/thepaulrydertapes. Go to our website, which is paulryder.tv, for links to the socials and to our shop. And if you'd like to see this episode on video, go to our YouTube channel, Glistening Stories, where it's going to be dropping next Sunday at 8 o'clock. And me and Chico will be live in the chat. Come back next week for another bonus episode right here. We're playing out with a track called Rocket Man that Paul did with his French collaborator in Los Angeles, Eddie Gronfier. We're going to be releasing a compilation album of a load of tracks that Paul did with various collaborators in the new year. Thank you so much for listening. Lots and lots of love to all of you. An extra special love and thanks go to the legend himself, that is Bez, as well, of course, to the man himself, the star of the show, the late, great Paul Anthony Ryder. Who knows to love and who
love and who to thank and bleed. I know when to strike and who to love and leave. Get on up for 30 days. I know when to walk and when to stop and breathe. We know when to talk and when to stop and leave. Hey, I know he's a snake, knows how to sing and read. Get on up for 30 days. Don't know who I am or what I'm doing.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.